Welcome to Altamar. Today we're going to navigate the high seas of global politics. My co-host Peter Schechter and I are still trying to process the predictable but unsettling developments in the recent election in Brazil, the world's fifth largest country, the eighth largest economy, 210 million people. And the newly elected president of this country is a right-wing populist, a strong man with a very, very strong personality as well. On January 1st, Jair Bolsonaro, a 63-year-old former army captain and formerly also obscure congressman, will be sworn in to lead the largest country in Latin America after winning the election with 55% of the vote.
Muni Bolsonaro managed to put together a majority coalition that went far beyond his voting base. Over the past months, Bolsonaro's popularity rocketed from the complete fringe. I mean, this guy was as unknown could be 2 or 3 years ago, attracting the most unlikely coalition of voters, rich and poor, white and Afro-Brazilians, droves of women, wealthy cariocas, taxi drivers, men from all parts of the country, leftists, evangelicals, actors, famous athletes. His electorate is spread throughout the country. And it covers most of the political spectrum. And on the way to power, this guy has managed to offend almost everybody. Gays, blacks, indigenous people, women have all been the butt of this tropical Trump's degrading attacks. And he's also promised bloodshed and wrath on criminals and leftists and told environmentalists straight off that their days of protecting the Amazon were done.
Today, we'll try to understand what really is happening in Brazil and also to guess what path Bolsonaro will take on a variety of issues that he campaigned on. In a few minutes, we'll bring in Thiago de Aragao to lend a hand. He's a widely published political risk expert and a fellow at the Institute of the Americas and other think tanks. But first, Peter, let's talk about the challenges and the very heavy agenda facing President-elect Bolsonaro. The big question that everybody is asking is, what's next? He did emerge victorious with a commanding lead, and his party made big gains in Congress, so he's got a pretty clear mandate. But what agenda is he going to push through this Congress? And to answer that question, it's important to look at some of the internal tensions that are already becoming public.
Muni, I have to say that it's exactly those tensions that worry me most. I mean, the big question to me is this guy going to take the difficult, tough, painful decisions that are needed to fix Brazil's deeply entrenched problems? Because you see, Bolsonaro's surrounded by so many different people and people of different beliefs. He's surrounded by economists that want privatization, but also industrialists that want protection. He's surrounded by reformers that understand that Brazil needs deep change, but he's also surrounded by military pensioners that don't want to give up one single real. Close to him are evangelicals that want a new foreign policy and agricultural interests that want to make sure not to offend any of the people that buy Brazil's soybeans and beef. I mean, I one of the fears I have is that this is a recipe for stagnation. And Brazil can't afford stagnation. It's a country that lost 10% of its GDP growth in the last 10 years. Its infrastructure is in really bad shape. Education is pathetic. Brazil's PISA scores are way below Chile's and ranked somewhere between Jordan and Albania. Corruption is rampant. This is a country that needs tough decisions really badly.
So all this talk about change, how is that going to play out? Well, on one hand, one of the first people he tapped was Paulo Guedes as a sort of super minister that combines the offices of finance, planning, and trade. So he's got most of the economic agenda. And he's a Chicago boy, Chicago School of Economics, who even taught in Chile under Pinochet. And he says that Brazil should privatize every single one of the state-owned enterprises and there are no sacred cows. And since the elections, he's doubled down on cutting taxes, overhauling regulation, increasing trade. But Bolsonaro and his campaign had been singing a different tune, Peter, and his whole life as well. He spent about 3 decades in Congress being a statist, protectionist, politician who opposed privatization. In other words, a standard Brazilian. And then he said that no minister should expect to have a free hand. Are they going to butt heads?
And I think, Muni, that's the key relationship is the one with Guedes. And the first test of that relationship is going to come on the much-needed pension reform. Guedes will probably propose a comprehensive and tough reform similar to the private sector finance Chilean pension system. But Brazil is a country with staggering, really staggering numbers of public employees that quickly take to the streets. And another source of tension is the military, a key ally of Bolsonaro. On pension reform, a World Bank report last year noted that one-third of the deficits recorded over the past decade by Brazil's federal civil servants comes from military pensions. Don't you think the military is going to push back hard on if they have a really radical pension reform? Of course they will.
And then there's foreign policy. Bolsonaro completely bucked the norm in Latin America by openly fawning over Trump on the campaign trail. And we can expect Brazil to be a major U.S. ally, a sort of a Latin American Netanyahu. But here are very strong tensions that will probably challenge some of his campaign promises. And pretty much everywhere you look on the map, if you start with the Middle East, Bolsonaro said he would move Brazil's embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. But Brazil's beef exports to the Arab world are soaring. Powerful businessmen won't want to put that at risk. On Asia, he kept repeating that China isn't buying in Brazil. China is altogether buying Brazil. And he even visited Taiwan and very controversially described it as a country, a major irritant in Beijing. So will he let the Chinese privatize Brazil's energy infrastructure? He says he won't. But China is Brazil's top trading partner and by far the biggest purchaser of its agricultural commodities. There will be powerful interests trying to tone down his Brazil first anti-China rhetoric, even within his own government.
And Mooney, I think the biggest foreign policy change is going to be Brazil's role in Latin America, because he's talked openly about the Venezuela crisis more like a national security issue than a humanitarian issue. He and his allies have promised a 180-degree change in policy in Venezuela. At the very least, we're going to see a large-scale militarization of the jungle border. But if Bolsonaro tries to stop the inflow of refugees by militarizing the border, he might also get pushback from other countries like Colombia, who have been treating refugees very much like a humanitarian crisis and taking them in by the thousands.
Let's now bring in our guest, Thiago D'Aragao, to talk specifically about Bolsonaro and business. Thiago is the director for Latin American political risk analysis at Arco Advice, a leading political analysis company in Brazil and the rest of Latin America. He's currently a member of the Brazilian Leaders of the Future group. He's a senior fellow at the French Institute of Foreign Affairs and also a senior fellow of the Institute of the Americas and a senior research associate for the Foreign Policy Center, a leading think tank in the UK. He's a regular columnist for GQ magazine in Brazil. More than anything important to us at Altamar, who are soccer fans, Thiago is a former professional soccer player in Europe and in Brazil. In addition, he spoke at the London School of Economics, State Department, Treasury Department, among other government institutions. And his new Brazilian politics podcast has quickly become a reference during this very tough electoral cycle. Thiago, welcome to Altamar.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thiago, you've written about the imminent challenges that Bolsonaro faces in the coming days and months. What are these challenges right now?
Well, President Bolsonaro, he has a lot of challenges ahead of him. Initially, this challenge is putting together a team, putting together a group of individuals that can not only reflect some of his mindsets, some of his ideas, but also transmit confidence for his voters, for the institutions, and for the country as a whole. Bolsonaro is someone that he has argued during his campaign that he wants to change everything from the past 16 years. In a country with such a high bureaucracy as Brazil, with over 25,000 directly appointed positions by the president, replacing all these individuals with individuals more aligned to his mindset is something that will be very complicated. But more than that, he needs to create a blueprint, at least a strategic plan of his next 100 days. And this strategic plan goes through his priorities, which is the economy, which is public security, and finding the correct and the strong interlocutors to make these ideas become executed in a orderly fashion and in a efficient fashion at the Brazilian parliament.
Thiago, I think that's one thing that really strikes me is all of the inner tensions that seem to exist in the not only in his coalition, in his electoral coalition, but in his most inner group. And you know, one of the private sector openly supported Bolsonaro, and how will they now lobby to get what they want? In particular, how will the tensions of what the private sector wants, private sector in Brazil has been you know, well known to want some protections of the state. And now how are they going to argue for that with the guy who's going to be the finance minister being Paulo Guedes, who is all about privatizations and opening the economy?
And this is a very interesting point. The Brazilian private sector is a group. You find a group of individuals, of influential individuals within the Brazilian private sector that campaign after campaign, election after election, they argue of the necessity of Brazil becoming a smaller state, more liberal-minded, with less regulation, with less interference of state. But every president that gets elected, the first thing several members of the private sector do is go there and kiss their hands and ask for their blessings, because Brazilians, they love the state. We are an invention of the state. Everyone in Brazil, whether they claim they are or not, everyone is center-left. And you know why everyone is center-left? Because everyone realizes that sooner or later, the state will act on their behalf, either with subsidies or protectionism or credit or any sort of thing that the state can offer that can protect their mindset. So in one hand, they request this, let me do my things and you don't interfere in my life. And on the other side, they are going to run and always like to run for this big daddy when problems come. So we have to see how this balance will happen in this current administration. And you raised a very good point. Paulo Guedes has a mentality of you do whatever it's necessary for you and the state won't bother you. But at the same time that the state won't bother you, the logic is the state will also won't help you. You're responsible for your own choices. And this is something that we are never used to in our 200 years of independent history.
So I think one of the things our listeners are going to be wondering now is, I guess, let me ask the question, which is top of mind on everybody's radar screen. Is Paulo Guedes going to be successful or not?
I think he will be successful, but for Paulo Guedes to be successful, it doesn't depend only on himself. Because the economic team, their power goes only to a certain point. They can conceptualize something brilliant. They can conceptualize the best reforms in the world, the best propositions in the world. And they can also implement several things that are within the executive jurisdiction. But when you need the parliament to approve certain structural changes, then it's not up to Paulo Guedes anymore. Then he needs an interlocutor that stays between him and the parliament to do this job. Right now, this interlocutor is based at the Ministry of the Civil House, which is this almost CEO office within the presidential palace, under the figure of this individual called Onyx Lorenzoni. Whether Onyx will have the ability to transform Guedes' ideas into reality, this is the big question mark. And this doesn't depend on Guedes anymore. The only thing that depends on Guedes is for him to be flexible enough to understand that the political dynamic is not necessarily based on merit of the issue, but on convergence of interests.
Let's go back to the campaign. Bolsonaro campaigned as a hardliner, and a lot of people are now worried about the potential for violence and big bloodshed in Brazil. And he's already seeking extraordinary powers to repress crime. It will be popular. It has been popular initially, but can it turn into a huge outbreak of violence?
I would say that Brazil is already in a huge outbreak of violence, because when we have 62,000 homicides a year, this is numbers that you only find in countries that are currently under war. Of course, any crime repression without organization and above anything without respect for the law and for the other is something that can turn out to become a big problem and a big tragedy. So the point there is everyone in Brazil understands and agrees that a strong tackling towards violence has to be done. No one during the campaign yet has listened of a very structural plan in order to do that. We have heard certain things that will be proposed by this administration that are useful and could be interesting depending on the point of view. Reduction the minimum age for the individual to be penalized for their crimes. Others that are more controversial, like allowing individuals to carry weapons or to hold weapons with themselves, which is very controversial. But we haven't seen, for example, a plan to take away or to increase the power of the federal government in fighting crime. Because right now, the power for fighting crime relies within the states. Brazil is a federative republic, so each state has their own civil police and military police. And they are paid by the local government, they are organized by the local government, and their chiefs are appointed by the local government. So this is why we have states in Brazil that are safe, others that are not, and others that are tragic. When you have a president proposing to end this problem, he needs to centralize again the control of the forces, of the police, take away power of the states, and this is a political difficulty that he will have to face.
And you're saying he has not had developed a plan to achieve this?
No, we haven't seen so far a major plan in this direction.
But don't you think that a federal effort to militarize an answer to crime is something that he wants to do?
He wants, but of course he faces a lot of boundaries in order to do that, of constitutional boundaries. He has one tool, which is called the National Force. The National Force, which now will be under Judge Moro, who was recently appointed Ministry of Justice, is a force that can be used. It's a federal unit of members from the army that can be used to tackle a specific problem at a specific state. And this is where the state, the federal government, has a power to allocate these individuals. But he only can do that if the governor of a specific state expressively requests that.
Do you see the fact that he appointed Judge Moro as a big victory for him?
For him, it was a big victory.
And for Judge Moro, it's a question.
For Judge Moro, it's a question mark. Because anything shorter than absolute success will play against him. The guy became almost a mythological creature in Brazil because after the car wash operation, he became the hero of everyone. Right now, he's going to the Ministry of Justice, in which people expect that he performs in the same level, with very different powers, with limited powers, with less powers. So this can be a problem for him if he doesn't, for example, directly affect lowering the homicide rate in Brazil. This can play against him.
Thiago, let me just change a little bit what we're talking about, because there's so much to talk about, which is that Bolsonaro received wide support from religious and evangelical voters in Brazil, who are a growing power. Can we expect him now to push really conservative social policies, be they on LGBT issues, on women rights, on minority rights, etc.?
We can. We can expect him to try to push some policies ahead. Again, everything through the parliament. In Brazil, the parliament is stronger than the executive.
Right. You use the word parliament when it's called Congress.
The Congress.
But exactly. It's almost like a parliament, right?
Exactly. It's almost like a parliament because we function, as we spoke earlier, in a parliamentary system disguised as a presidentialist system. So in the Brazilian Congress, he can propose several things in this end. For example, one of the things that he spoke during the campaign is to take away the debate of gender policies from schools. This is something that it's controversial and it requires some sort of protection or some sort of creation of an amendment or a bill or an indication from the Congress in order to do that. But I think the most impactful thing is basically his narrative in a similar way that we see in the United States. When you have and this is something that he needs to change urgently, because when we have a president that has a very controversial, direct, and sometimes very aggressive narrative against any group, although this doesn't necessarily transform into public policies, this empowers the local idiot, the local individual at any city to start acting, feeling empowered by that narrative. And this is dangerous because this is what connects to the previous question that we said about escalation of violence and the escalation of specific type of violence. So the responsibility of a president in anything that he says has to be absolute, even if he claims that he won't transform this into active public policy, or even if he claims that it's just figure of speech, that he's not actually meaning that.
I'm sure that extends to environmental policy, and many people are concerned about the future of the Amazon after he has openly said that he will ramp up mineral and agricultural exploitation of this key area of the planet. What do you think is going to happen on that front?
In the beginning, in less than a week, we've seen the announcement that the Ministry of Agriculture and the Ministry of Environment would merge, and then that they would not merge anymore. Many people attribute, and of course this is something that we can't check, but to one of the famous letters that Gisele Bündchen wrote criticizing this merger. And Gisele Bündchen has a very amazing power in order to influence, I think, any individual in the world. In this particular sense, the merging of these two ministries naturally represent a threat to the Amazon, because if you have the merger of two ministries in which the agriculture is definitely the most powerful over the environmental one, you'd have licenses being issued in order to favor the agricultural part of it. But when Bolsonaro walks back and announces that he won't merge anymore, he shows that he's becoming more susceptible to certain type of public pressure. So I still think that the Amazon can suffer in terms of policies that stimulate exploitation or stimulate further usage of land for agriculture or even for mineral exploitation. But on the other hand, I think that a lot of power still remains with the parliament, with the Congress. And at the same time, he has at least given a glimpse that public pressure might make him back down a little bit in certain ideas.
Let's move to foreign policy for a minute. You know, there's been lots written in the last couple of days about Bolsonaro being a type of symbiotic tropical Trump, in which and Trump will now be happily sort of departing. In particular, people talk about Venezuela, but also he's been very controversial on China, which of course is also something that makes Trump very happy. Tell us a little bit about how foreign policy in Brazil is going to change, particularly when you have a foreign ministry as historically powerful but recently weakened as Brazil's foreign ministry. What are the specific things that are going to change under Bolsonaro's government?
Well, the specific things that we're going to see above anything else is a very tough stance against Venezuela. Because Venezuela is the living example of the narrative that Bolsonaro used throughout his campaign of what Brazil could become. So for him to be extremely tough on Venezuela, not only on his narrative, but also in multilateral areas, putting the country against the wall is something that for him is a symbol of how he intends to protect Brazil from this black future that could be ahead of us. So this is one thing. Second, traditionally, Brazilians, they don't look at foreign policy very strongly. And although Bolsonaro is claimed to be or is sometimes compared to Trump and to Duterte, I think he's a third class of his own. While Trump, he has the fuel to burn to put China against the wall and to do certain of his also controversial moves in terms of trade in the world, because they have the power, the U.S. has the power to do that. Duterte is a president that has no institutional environment in the country and he can do anything that he wants. Bolsonaro will be somewhere in between. Bolsonaro can have a strong narrative against China, but he has very little ground to move anything similar to what Trump did in relation to China. We depend on China a lot on our trade. He can politically become farther from China, decrease the power of the BRICS, for example, but not touch trade. In terms of Mercosur, if he decides to follow some of Trump's ideas, he can weaken the Mercosur and perhaps fight for an opening to do bilateral agreements with the countries of Mercosur. Although I don't see him doing that, and I don't think this will happen. But we're going to see more of a commercial bias outside, a more strongly commercial behavior, a strong narrative against anything from the left. Cuba, Venezuela, and anything else. And perhaps some weakening of international group of groups such as the BRICS, in which Brazil has dedicated a lot of time lately.
A lot of people are afraid that Bolsonaro's victory means that another strong man from the right is coming into the world with Duterte, like you mentioned, with Trump, with all of the other leaders in Europe, Erdogan in Turkey, Le Pen. But it seems from what you're saying that you are suspecting that his campaign has been a campaign from the far right, but either because his hands are tied or because he is susceptible to public opinion, he will govern more in the center right of the Brazilian spectrum. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
I think we're going to see glimpses of extreme right in his narrative. We might have certain examples of extreme right in some attempts of public policies, but in general, it will be a center-right administration because this huge magnet inside the Brazilian Congress pulls everyone to the center. And pulling everyone to the center, it prevents crazy ideas from both spectrums of the ideological line. So I see that in comparison to those leaders that you said, he's going to be closer perhaps to Trump that uses a lot of narrative than closer to Duterte that actually does direct public policies, which are extreme right.
So all bark and no bite.
I think it will be a lot of bark and very few bites.
And you continue to believe, Thiago, that the Brazilian Congress will behave in the way it has always behaved, which is really the famous give me a little, take a little, but be very pragmatic and centrist. You don't see Bolsonaro's own personality being able to sort of run away with a forcing coalition.
I think the Congress can have some small hiccups through the way of benefiting Bolsonaro's ideas. For example, in terms of gun rights, allowing individual to have guns, yes. But in general terms, anything that alters the structure of the Brazilian state, I see the Congress remaining pragmatic. I don't see the Congress allowing constitutional changes that can enhance his power, decrease the rights of specific groups, or anything in this sense. And I think that Bolsonaro will be someone that his narrative is what can cause most changes than necessarily some of his policies in this area. I'm not saying it's going to be a great presidency. I'm not even saying that it's going to be a good presidency. But the fears that people has to be different fears. I think the fears should be inefficiency, lack of accomplishment, and not being able to approve the structural reforms that we need.
Thiago de Aragon, thank you so much for joining us on Altamar.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
So Mooney, you know, you read the newspapers, watch TV, you get frustrated, angry, outraged about Bolsonaro. But when you listen to somebody like Thiago, on the other hand, you have to wonder whether Bolsonaro's bite is going to match his bark. Because certainly he is a guy who whips up emotions. He puts people's frustrations, very much like Trump, that puts people's frustrations on the table. But, you know, I think what Thiago has outlined for us is a series of institutional impediments in Brazil that really will make it difficult for him to be quite as dangerous as so many people are making him out to be. How did you come out of that conversation?
Well, it's obvious that there are some institutional roadblocks to him kind of having a free rein on his agenda, on his campaign promises. But even the talking the talk is pretty risky also in terms of his, you know, war against the LGBT, his war against women in general, his, you know, kind of sympathetic attitude towards weapons and violence. It could be used by others to justify different types of attitudes. So it might not just be him and his policies, but what type of climate he's going to create in an already, you know, pretty fired up nation.
Well, I think that there is one thing that we can say is I was certainly surprised by the appointment of Judge Sergio Moro, who was the anti-corruption king in Brazil, the guy who's become as Thiago said, a mythological figure who has agreed to join the government.
Well, it was only a matter of time before he really stuck both feet into politics.
And I think it's a huge risk for Judge Moro, but it's a big win for Bolsonaro. And now Bolsonaro has two superstar ministers in his government. And he is certainly surrounding himself with people who are the ones who are going to get all the press attention when some of these tough measures have to be passed. So, you know, I think the big question that remains in my mind is Brazil going to be swimming in culture wars, fake news, and chaos for the next 5 years? Or is it actually going to have a government that's going to make some decisions, even while, as you said, we're going to have some tough-minded, right-wing, anti-gay, anti-women rhetoric swimming around, but that the government will make some decisions? And I think that's what we're all going to be watching for over the next months, to see just how much this government can produce.
I think we'll come back to the challenges that Thiago mentioned that he needs to address in the first 100 days and kind of have a report card in a few months to see how he's doing.
And with that, we thank you all for listening to Altamar. We'll see you next time.